Planet FM is a platform that champions diversity. Not all our programs reflect the views of the station. We encourage you to consider a wide range of information from trusted sources when making decisions about your health.
But at this stage, particularly during the COVID situation where a lot of jobs have been lost, it would be better to employ people to actually have meetings in some of these rural areas where farmers can come and give them some hard copy information. We talk about teaching people all sorts of things like substance abuse or whatever, but somehow we're not wanting to teach our farmers. We're just going to slap them on the head with the government deems that they're doing incorrectly. So I think it's not that we don't want to manage our ecosystem in the urban areas as in the rural areas, but I think it would be a lot cheaper and a lot more efficient if we did it, or if the government chose to do it in a different way. But the way the rural area, well, we're all going to be managed, is not the way that we want to manage our own lives. There'll be no base for us to make those decisions for ourselves and choices for ourselves. We will be told what to do.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Planet FM 104.6. I am Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth.
In the studio this morning, I have Antoinette James of AntoinetteJames.com. And she is here with me. She's come up from the south to spend some time with me in the studio this morning because there are so many issues facing us that we do not know much about at all. In particular, what's happening in the global scene. And I want to be able to speak with Antoinette about the big picture. So kia ora and thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much, Tim. I'm very happy to be here this morning.
Yes, well, Antoinette, I saw you a number of times on Facebook, and I just felt you were wonderful at commentating, and whenever you mentioned the government, you saluted.
That's right. Well, what else can you do? Slap or cry.
And so I just think that you're a wonderful presenter. And so we've got a situation on Earth at the moment where none of us planned for this. No one thought that we would be in this situation 2 years ago. 18 months ago.
No.
But now we're in it. So can I ask, where are you up to now and how you see things?
Well, the last 5 years, I'll just step back a little bit. The last 5 years has been an amazing journey of just, I guess we call it red pilling or waking up and realizing what we have been taught, what we know, the world around us, what we see as reality is anything but so. And I particularly woke up during my husband and family were in the UK at the time. So we were right there at the beginning and through the Brexit. And then in Britain, watching the Trump administration take office over that time. And just hearing people's polarized ideas in politics and geopolitics is something I hadn't seen before. And it made me think, what is happening here? Started researching and squirreling around. And found that, yes, we are in a very interesting place in history and where perhaps we haven't been before because of the technology around us, but things are speeding up very, very fast. And we need to wake up. We need to understand that we are not governing our own lives. We're not governing our own destiny. There are powers above us that are doing that. And from someone that has been a home educating mum and had that autonomy of life and choice with our children and how that might flow day to day, hour to hour, week to week, year to year, suddenly to realize those choices in my future were fast closing was very alarming to me. And so I started squirreling around. I actually embarked through 2017, 2018 in full-time research, geopolitical research, just trying to find out how it connected, because nothing seemed to connect at that stage until I started getting down a few rabbit holes and seeing the names down yes. there were down every rabbit hole and how that might connect and what happened in history and particularly at the beginning of the 20th century. So that just opened all that up. And I wrote We Are Revolting, a book that I initially wrote for my children because they were all on the cusp of adulthood in their late teens, moving into their 20s at the time. A couple were well into their 20s, and I wanted them to know the world that they were going to have to live in. The
inherit,
world.
Yes.
Yeah, and I didn't want them to have despair in their life, have any mental issues, emotional issues, not knowing what was happening. I wanted them to understand, because if you're informed, you handle life a lot better. And so I wrote We Are Revolting, and 2019 we came back to New Zealand, and around just near the end of that winter, I just had this urgency in my heart and my spirit that something big was going to happen, and I got my husband to help me build many, many raised gardens. We bought in animals for our own livestock to try and become self-sufficient on our half acre as we could. I'd already got into a little bit of fermenting and understanding how one might live off-grid a little bit more, or particularly without a fridge. And I didn't feel ready, and we got these gardens going. We planted them out, and I kept saying to Reese, I don't feel ready, I don't feel ready, not knowing what was going to happen. And then, boom, we had what we now know as the plandemic, scamdemic, and our comrade Ardern locked us down illegally. And there is the point, I think, in New Zealand where things are speeding at an uncontrollable level in a lot of secrecy and covertly down there in the beehive, where we know we haven't got a government. We have a corporation, an alien foreign corporation on our soil that are doing the bidding for their bosses and not for us. So that led me to do some public meetings last year and around the Taupo electorate, and I even stood for the elections with the NZPP at that time, amalgamated with Advance NZ, because I felt I had to do something. And as I talked around Taupo, Cambridge, Te Rau, all the different places we went to, I found just ordinary people like me there looking for answers as well, and having that same feeling that our life is about to change and it's never going to be the way we know it. And that's before we heard the Great Reset, all that jargon and vocabulary coming out. And then what I was trying to do during those meetings is kind of put the United Nations Agenda 21, Agenda 2030 into a package that was understandable. Because again, like when I did We Are Revolting, looking across the, particularly the West geopolitically, it took a while to put that into sense and to put it down in an easy to digest manner. And so I came up with the kind of the tree metaphor for United Nations Agenda 21. So we could look at the roots, we could look at the trunk, we could look at the branches, the leaves, the fruit, to open up that then the tree needs tending, it needs staking, it needs pruning, it needs weeding. And I was able to kind of bring in those concepts. And so I've written Under the Shadow, Agenda 21 in New Zealand. It's a 314-page book with over, that squirreled through over 80 documents. And
fantastic, really.
Yeah.
What a production.
So it's been full on. 6 months, I've done very little else. It's been big, and it's nice now to have it out and I can just rest a bit.
Because you're a molecular biologist, is that right?
Oh, no, I wouldn't say that. I'm a microbiologist from training, or my first training. I retrained many years ago, but I first left school into microbiology.
So you have some professional skills that are very important, because when we look into the micro world,
yeah,
I mean, whew, it's huge. It's small down there,
yeah,
whereas on the macro, it's gigantic in the universe. So we're looking at the small and the big.
Yes.
And the hidden as well.
Yes, definitely, yeah.
Well, look, I've covered a number of issues, because I'm a big picture person too, because I flew as crew for Air New Zealand. Mm. And so I was flying in near-Earth orbit for 17 years at 10 kilometres above the planet's surface. So I had a very interesting understanding of how I saw life. And so I too, in the last few years, have been looking sort of sideways at what's this Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030. We just lost one of our great speakers.
Mm.
Her name is
Rosa Corey.
Rosa Corey, yeah. That's right.
She must be mentioned today.
Definitely, because she started the ball rolling and let people know that there was another agenda. And because on the surface, now this goes back to 1992 in the Rio conference, and I was sort of very keen on the environment well before then, And the signing of this by all the countries virtually on our whole planet under the auspices of George Bush, a CIA operative who was in the White House for 12 years, and nobody actually questioned that side of him. But what it was that we signed this agreement, and on the surface, it looked fairly good. I've still got, should we say, friends, and they're becoming a little bit distant at the moment, who are saying, it's a good agenda. We need to be able to take care of everything and get everybody out of the countryside into cities, which I don't believe in anyway, and get into this smart future, this 5G future, this fourth industrial revolution, etc., where in the end we get all chipped and we become a transhuman, which is a horror story. So can you tell us a little bit, what are your main things that you'd want to share with listeners today?
Everything connects. Nothing has happened by accident. You can see that where COVID supposedly was worse were in the big 5G cities around the world, Florence and Wuhan, New York, places like that. And very interestingly, 5G was established and then boom, we then had the COVID. My take on it is that Agenda 21 was supposed to be pretty much rolled out by now. It was supposed to be all sorted, hence the 21st century. They are running behind schedule, hence the 2030. So the Agenda 2030 has not taken over from Agenda 21. It just all works in parallel. So there's a kind of the global aspect of it, and then there's the local aspect of it. So anything and everything that is combating us, like the COVID, that's really put a stop to everything we do. We're not out and about, we're not shopping as much, we're supposed to social distance, although I think in New Zealand we're past that as people, not the government. But all this is to fast track us to Agenda 2030. We just aren't making the grade to get there. What we've got 9 years left now. And we've got Jacinda Ardern, who in 2019 wrote New Zealand's first voluntary national review to the United Nations elite, which basically, when you read it, is an audit of the country. It's telling her bosses at the UN where we are as a country. And again, as you read it, it's got all that feel-good language about it. But what you need to understand behind that as word definition, there's a lot of word trickery going on. So when we hear well-being, which is one of those words in the Voluntary National Review that's frequently repeated, she repeats it in her speeches as well, you need to sort of think, okay, so what is well-being to her? What is well-being to the United Nations elites and movers and shakers? What does that mean to them? And to understand that, you need to look at the biodiversity assessment and some of those other documents that support that. And you find out that human beings' well-being isn't in a manner that you would expect it from a Judeo-Christian perspective, where we are made in the image of a creator, yet we're given the responsibility of stewardship to care for our ecosystem. That well-being, from their point of view, doesn't put man in that place. Man has been given the same rights as a rock or as a river. So we actually are below the ecosystem. The ecosystem must come first, and that's where we get our precautionary principle. And we're now in the decade, officially in the decade of eco-restoration. So that's not renovation. This is restoration as it was before man set foot here. And bringing Rosa Corey in at this point, I listened to her a year ago on an interview with Vinnie Eastwood, and she suspects that New Zealand, in the end, will have no one living here. Everyone will be put into super cities. In the end, we will be then shipped to Australia. Now, this could be a 50, 60, 70-year plan, but that's what Rosa said. And when you look at what Jacinda Ardern says and has on the table and all her documents, I can't see anything yet that would contradict what Rosa is suggesting.
Wow, you're just sort of blindsided me that because I was, I'm part Maori. I mean, so being shipped out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because the whole thing is that would New Zealand just be an ark for biota?
I think it will be a little museum. It will be a little any imported animal, horses, cows, sheep, the tar, as we know, they'll all go. probably just become an elite's playground with enough of us plebeians to change the sheets each morning.
I see, because I don't think the way they're playing around with chemtrails, and the way they're playing around with, shall we say, heart technologies,
yes,
weather warfare, frequency warfare, I don't know if they want to actually keep this as a perfect personification of a Garden of Eden, to be perfectly frank.
Mm.
But one of the things was, I noticed that at the Goalkeepers Conference in New York, Bill Gates Foundation, can you tell us about that? Because this is where our Prime Minister stipulated that New Zealand would become the first country.
She suggested that she was definitely heading that way as being the first country to achieve Agenda 2030 living. So that means we're looking at all the waterways pre-human, so that means we are going to be off the land. We're already seeing now farmers particularly hammered, and through the significant natural areas in that regard. I live in the South Waikato. There's a Waikato Wellbeing Initiative, and that is basically taking us, well, crushing the Waikato. We've got the Waikato Expressway. At the moment, it's got on and off ramps, but I think in the end, like Obama did in America, all those ramps will be closed, and it will be just a corridor from Auckland to Tauranga, and there'll be no one each side.
Well, you've put a stake in the ground for this one, so if anybody says an off-ramp closed, then they'll come back to you and go up there and go to antoinettejames.com.
Yep, and we'll fight it together.
Okay. Yeah, because there are many things there that I'm concerned about. One of the things is that, as a dairy farmer's son, the cow manure from our cow shed eventually got into a creek and into a river.
Mm.
Now, we have to make sure that farmers don't do that.
Mm. Yes.
And and I know most farmers now have, for the last 20 years plus, have had big ponds to be able to keep that cow manure as treated, etc.
Mm.
I know that as farmers, they're in the rural sector, a lot of them haven't got fast fibre or fast internet speed, so therefore they're not getting the information that they need. Every bit of information is flowing around the planet I can peruse pretty quickly and get up to speed.
Mm.
But there are a lot of farmers who don't. And so they are not up with the game plan at the moment, and they need to get really, really savvy.
Mm.
And it's a difficult one if they haven't got fast internet access to get the information you want to share.
Mm. Well, I think money, our rates, taxes, whatever, could be spent a lot better than the way they are at the moment with this top-down heavy centralisation that's going on. All Waikato's water is now going to be run from Auckland. So I don't know why Auckland somehow seems to understand what our water needs are in the Waikato, but I suspect we'll all have rations in the end, and they're needing the Waikato water, or at least the running of it, or there could well be it siphoned off up into Auckland in some manner in the future, because if we're moving to super cities, they need to have that central control. So if they stop spending colossal amounts of money doing like the, I mean, for all, it's fine if you want to cycle from Cambridge to Hamilton with the cycle lane. But at this stage, particularly during the COVID situation where a lot of jobs have been lost, it would be better to employ people to actually have meetings in some of these rural areas where farmers can come and give them some hard copy information. We talk about teaching people all sorts of things like substance abuse or whatever, but somehow we're not wanting to teach our farmers. We're just going to slap them on the head with the government deems that they're doing incorrectly. So I think it's not that we don't want to manage our ecosystem in the urban areas as in the rural areas, but I think it would be a lot cheaper and a lot more efficient if we did it, or if the government chose to do it in a different way.
So you're talking about education. So I'm a great believer in town hall meetings.
Mm, well, it used to go that way, didn't it?
That's right. Now, just the other day, I had a very interesting email that I received. I did an interview with Heather Mary Pennycook and Rob Wilson of Agricultural Action Group, aag.org.nz. aag.org.nz. She was at Ngātia.
And Rob.
That's right. They were in this little rugby football club.
Mm.
And they were standing room only.
Mm.
Because all of a sudden the rural sector realised that they had been missed out.
Yep.
And so what's filling the vacuum are people like you and people like Heather, Mary and Rob.
Mm.
Because it's really important for us to get savvy with what's going on because we're going to be left behind.
Mm.
And so this is, again, what you're out to share with people.
Well, yes, not so much that we're going to be left behind, but the way the rural area, well, we're all going to be managed is not the way that we want to manage our own lives. There'll be no space for us to make those decisions for ourselves and choices for ourselves. We will be told what to do because Jacinda Ardern and her voluntary national review, and I do believe she said it in her goalkeeper's address, that there would be no one left behind. And so, again, this is the word trickery. It sounds all good. Oh, no, we don't want anyone left behind. But no, there will be no one left behind. So if you are not going to come with this Agenda 2030 desire of ours, lifestyle that is for the future, we will drag you out with the army because no one will be left behind. We're in a less dictatorial regime because we're hardly democratic here in New Zealand, but those choices would be left with the individuals. The individual is really important. The individual, if you rob the individual of their status, then you're slaves. You've got no critical thinking. You're not allowed to work things out for yourself. You must be told what to do. And we'll end up like China. Each spring, it's revolution season, and people are pushing back. So it's about empowering people as individuals. And once you do give that ownership, then that makes stronger communities. If you've got someone miles away that you never see, but you just hear their voice telling you to do this, that, and the other,
you rebel.
You do rebel, and it means nothing. It's like, what do they say, as cold as charity, whatever? It means nothing to you. There's no emotional investment because you have been kept out of the picture.
I agree with you completely. The Auckland super city now is so huge and so vast, and I'm right up at the northern end of it, and the traffic queues in the morning in our area, you could be about, I don't know, 200 cars behind slowly going through this particular junction. Now, the junction is actually right beside the old courthouse for Warkworth. The Warkworth used to once have a mayor. Now, if I have to communicate with the mayor, I have to go and communicate with the Auckland mayor, who's like nearly like wanting to communicate with the Queen, so distant.
That's right.
Whereas in a little area where I am in Warkworth, I could just go and knock on the door of a burial office or get on the phone, and I've got that communication instantly. Mm. And with 50 car drivers or 700 car drivers saying, clean this all up, they would go and do something about it. But at the moment, Auckland Super City, it's just so huge and cumbersome, you get no action. And this is centralising of power from all the small little towns that now have been dragged into this conglomerate called the Auckland Super City.
It's to disenfranchise people. It's so that we have got no face, we've got no one we can talk to, and it is all part of the transhumanism. It's the beginning where we're on our own. There's no one that's going to help us. There's no one in our community that's got a heart for us anymore. And it just separates us more and more. It dehumanizes us in the way we're living. And it's just another thread of getting ready for whatever they're going to do next. Same with this 70-plus agendas, for example. It's to dehumanize everyone because the transhumanist thing hasn't got a gender. So first you start destroying genders, which is actually a linguistic term. It was never applied to the physical human being. It was to do with, particularly in French, where you have the feminine or the masculine, that's what gender comes from.
Yes.
And so now it's been applied to us, and now you can be gender this and gender that, and transitioning into whatever you want to transition into. And I learnt recently, I don't know what it's called, but there's a series that's either about to come on British television or is on British television. And there's a girl, she would be in her late teens, I suppose, she's transitioning to be connected into the Internet of Things. And her parents are saying, oh, they're trying to struggle with this whole concept. And they say, well, what's going to happen to your body? And she said, oh, it'll just be composted. See, it's dehumanizing. It doesn't matter what happens to our physical body. It's moving us on to whatever. I mean, the reality is I don't think we plebs are ever going to get there.
No.
But that's what we're being sold to bring us into it here.
Yes. I look back when I was a kid and we had all these different little churches all around of different denominations, and Mum and Dad, well, they weren't really interested. Mum and Dad were either atheist or agnostic, and yet they were good, honest, loving parents. And in the end, I wasn't sent to any of these. I went to Sunday school. But at school, we, on our forms used to fill in, it had religion. Are you a Catholic, a Presbyterian, a Methodist, Anglican? And it made us question something in us. And the religions always have said, well, look, we are a soul and we inhabit a body.
That's right.
And people who have had near-death and out-of-body experiences are 100% in agreement of that, even though every professor in academia refuses, it just says we're hallucinating. So what's happened is that we've been programmed to think that we are now a consumer body or a walking desire body, and so we can go and do anything we like as long as we don't really hurt anybody else. But this means we're having young ones looking at gender assignments, having operations on their body, and then we have heard of others who did this some years ago who are really upset that they made that decision.
Yes.
And they've been ignored.
That's right.
But what's happening is that this whole transition of material and physical pleasure, we have been told, go and have all your pleasure centres and have a great time with them. And so it's just service to self now, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it just caters for, as you say, the physical. And getting tying that into the United Nations, and more accurately, the elite behind the United Nations, they have all been brought up because they are from those noble bloodlines you hear of. And my research, that is certainly true. I wasn't sure what that meant, but it certainly is true. They are tied into that. So they all have the Aristotelian philosophy that there are, you are born to rule or you are born to be ruled. And they see themselves as being born to rule over us. We plebs, plebeians, we have been born to be ruled. The Aristotelian take on our lives is that we don't have a soul. We're just the cells we're made up of. And that's really what Darwinism also builds upon as well. So, and that is now reflected in our school curriculum, even though maybe covertly, particularly when it comes to sciences. That also goes back to the British Royal Society that was put together by the Fabians, that have got that Aristotelian belief as well, that really there's two species. And I think it was Bertrand Russell, he said, over time you will see the nobles and the rest of the useless eaters will be two distinctive looking species. That's really what they believed. That's one of the reasons why the elite, Darwin, married into the Wedgwood family, his cousin, they all kept their genes, their chromosomes within their gene pool. And then, of course, we know Darwin had struggled with a very shallow gene pool among his children, and few of them didn't make it to adulthood. There were problems. So that was a bit ironic for him, but however. And that is the problem. Well, what it stems from is that they believe they are born to rule and we have no soul. We're not made up of spirit. We're not made up of soul. We are just there to be slaves.
Yes. It's interesting because my father, he was keen on an international order.
Okay.
He said humans are just too many wars, too much destruction. We have to come together. And he sort of got me onto the United Nations when I was young. And so I thought, well, that sounds like a good idea. Let's unite. And believe it or not, when the fax machines first came into prominence, it was the United Nations that actually organised it, that every fax machine from every different country could all communicate together. So the UN actually acted as a means to be able to allow communications to come together. And I thought that was interesting. And, of course, with IATA, because I was flying with Air New Zealand, when we used to fly, from, say, Auckland to Australia, and then we'd go over Indonesia, and so the New Zealanders would pass the information on the communications and satellite areas to the Australians, who then pass it on to the Indonesians, and then to the Singaporeans, and then to the Malaysians, and then we'd finally land up in Thailand and Bangkok. And all that was part of the United Nations too, making sure that we all were able to communicate with each other, everything was safe, etc. Anyway, but since 1992, 93, I started to question a few things, and I looked deeper and deeper and deeper, and I realised that the United Nations is compartmentalised, and they've got a lot of good people working in on the ground level, doing good things for people. Mm-hmm. But as you get further up, like the banking system, you get up to the top of the pyramid of power, everything becomes more compartmentalised, and you don't know really what's going on. And there is problems there. I have problems now with the UN, which is a great pity, but but then, you know, I've got problems with Bilderbergers and the Council of Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission and Chatham House and it goes on. So what we're doing is we're realising that things are not what we thought.
No.
You have, Antoinette, you've pulled back the curtain and had a look.
Well, I have. In my latest book, it's on Amazon now. We're hoping to, in the next week, to have hard copy that you can purchase from me. But I look at the United Nations, why they wanted to bring the nations together in the first place. Was it really to amicably sort out differences and conflicts, or was there another hidden agenda behind that? So I look into that, and yes, there is a other hidden agenda. I guess same as Rosa Corey found that behind the green mask, that to be good stewards and to look after our ecosystem, the United Nations have a whole different agenda. So it's sold to the world as being a green deal, but behind it, it is just straight out oligarchical communism, dictatorship, whatever you want to call it. And the same with the UN. You know, it seems to say, hey, we're here to bring unity around the world and collaborate, but behind the scenes, they're here as a one-world dictatorship. So that is part of the problem. The other thing you were saying about the wars and easily proven, I mention it in We Are Revolting, but the wars and the revolutions, the French Revolution, the Russian Revolution, were choreographed by the elite themselves. The French Revolution was funded out of the City of London. The Russian Revolution was funded out of Wall Street. Hitler's Nazi regime was funded out of New York and Washington. IBM was right in there. IBM also puffed up Bill Gates. They keep it all in-house. But we are sold this idea that religions are causing wars. They're not. There is an agenda behind it, and there are people that are fomenting these problems and causing these wars and sparking the wars. It hasn't happened, and revolutions, it hasn't happened from we the people. It has happened higher up, because wars and revolutions are very, very expensive things to operate. So it happens from top down. So this is part of the Hegelian dialectic to make us run to the government. Help, help, you know, we have an enemy on our shores. We must stop these world wars, particularly World War I, World War II, on top of each other, on the heels of one another. People had enough. And so League of Nations, which was the United Nations' first trial to get off the ground, it was ousted fairly quickly because the communist operators that were there. And then Woodrow Wilson started moving on getting that into operation. And then later on, after World War II, particularly America was forced into, well, pretty much forced into the United Nations to bring that together. They didn't want to be the world's policemen. It was the Rockefeller who was puffed up and made crazy rich by the Rothschild, in simple terms, who was funded from the Vatican, that actually bought an enormous swath of land in New York and built the United Nations, David Rockefeller, the one that recently died. So it's not, it's the high players above government, then now they all seem to be interconnected, but above government that got all the foundational infrastructure sorted so that the United Nations would have a foot in the biggest economy, the most freest society in the world. And my book, We Are Revolting, looks across the West, but particularly at America and Britain. Those two countries have to be pulled down, have to be pulled down for the rest of the world to collapse. And so we need to be looking very carefully. And we might not like this president or that prime minister, but they're just puppets. There's a bigger dialectic afoot to put us into a position that we will then say, yes, let's have a one world government, and that will be our demise, total end.
Well, I think I mentioned it before. 2 years ago, pretty well this month, pretty well nearly to the day, I ended up in the Aegean Sea in the Mediterranean, and my boat was going from point A to point B from Samos to Rhodes and ended up at Patmos. And Patmos is where John wrote Revelation. So I ended up there and thinking, gosh, this is out of the blue.
Mm.
But a lot of this also ties in with Revelation, because I know that many people are looking at the fact that in there that talks about the mark of the beast,
mm.
and the mark of the beast is becoming very prominent now.
Mm.
And it's a huge hurdle to be able to understand what John actually saw, because he was seeing stuff that he had no idea of,
mm.
and to discern what it was all about. But essentially, there's a lot of people now turning to their Bibles of all.
Mm.
And funnily enough, too, I mean, I was living in America for a while, been up there twice, and there's also the Hopi prophecy, and the Hopi prophecy from Four Corners, essentially New Mexico, Arizona. They talk about the demise of humanity solely because, I think it goes something like that, well, no, I won't even mention it. So I'm seeing all this stuff, and from my own standpoint now, I want to see a unification of sorts, so I'm saying unity consciousness.
Mm.
So that each country can have its own sovereignty,
mm-hmm.
each person can have its own sovereignty, but we unify as a humanity together, all 7.8 billion of us.
Yes, and if you've got the right people that are going to negotiate and pull together on that, you're fine. But we haven't, and there's the problem. We've got people that want really... In my books, I got the quotes. It's not hearsay. They want a one-world government. They want a one-world religion. And that is the basis of the United Nations in the very, very outset. Before they got onto this united front of nations, their primary role was to bring in a one-world religion, because they go back to Nimrod, the tyrannical ruler. He had a one-world religion. He had a one-world government. And particularly when you look into Masonic masonry and Luciferian and Jesuit teaching, they all connect. They're one and the same, really. And it goes back to the religion, the Mithra religion or pantheism, and a one-world religion.
Okay. We could spend a lot of time there.
Yeah.
I'm speaking with Antoinette James of AntoinetteJames.com, and we're looking at what's happening in the world that we don't hear much of on TV1, TV3, Radio New Zealand, or the New Zealand Herald. We just don't seem to get this front page news. Recently, we've just heard about the Great Reset, the World Economic Forum.
Yes.
Klaus Schwab. And they're talking about we are going to own nothing by 2030, and we're all going to be jubilant and joyful. My thing is that I've looked at a number of all these videos and what they've put out, and I'm going to say just a couple of things. They never, ever mention love.
No.
And they never, ever mention soul or the spiritual awakening of the true human being to make a greater connection with God.
Mm. Well, one of my favourite historians, I spend a lot of time listening to him. He's retired now, I do believe. His name is Webster Tarpley.
Oh, yes.
And, yep. And he talks about, because you can trace these nobles back actually to the Venetians and beyond, or further back into the Canaanites. But in one of his lectures, he calls them the dead souls. They are the dead souls. They have no comprehension of humanity at all. So that's why we can be, they can call us useless eaters, because they don't see us as individuals with a life to live. They call us cannon fodder, because they can, wars is one way of culling us, because it's all about getting rid of us, depopulation. And they call us the great unwashed, whatever. They've got a myriad of names that they can call us, because they have no heart for us. And again, through United Nations, they are swapping out our inalienable rights under God to get about our business for our so-called United Nations or international rights. So for an example, I have the right to go and forage, get my food, grow my food, raise my food, eat what I want, do whatever I want. But no, that's going to, in the Great Reset, that will not be allowed, because we can't have this disorder. We need order. But United Nations says we have the right to eat. So that might be just laboratory-made food.
Yes, well, what it is at the moment is sanitised food.
Mm.
You see, the big thing is I've been pushing New Zealand farmers markets across New Zealand, because that's where you can hopefully get good organic food, but you can network.
Yes.
The key to farmers markets is actually to go and socialise and connect. Mm. And if you have something to say, have a whole lot of pamphlets and pass them out. This is the way you're going to get this information out. And so I'm all for that. Mm. But I want to talk about is this Great Reset, because it's coming and they're going to drop it on us. Then, see, with Sweden is 80% cashless already. So they're ready to trigger straight away. And the Swedes too, for some unknown reason, they've become more and more physical and material. And they're quite happy now, in many cases, to have a chip, a silicon chip in there, because they didn't read Revelation. But anyway, so we've got this going on. We've got to throw a few things in because of the time sequence, that we've got the Georgia Stones in Georgia in America. Mm-hmm. And people need to go up there and do Georgia Stones. It's like a very mini Stonehenge. Read all the stories in many languages, and it basically says the best is 500 million people on the face of this planet.
Yep.
And anyway, in the meantime, we are also having a COVID. And just yesterday, they mentioned in the States, they've just gone on 6,000 people who have died from the COVID. So, injection.
Mm-hmm.
And yet previously, if you had more than 25 people die from a vaccination of any sort, they instantly halted it.
Yes, they did.
Now we're 6,000 there, and we don't know what's happening. I've heard big numbers, actually, even in New Zealand.
Oh,
so I'm having to keep quiet about because I don't want to say something that's out of alignment.
Mm.
So what's happening with the Great Reset?
Well, my take on the Great Reset is the elites, they have all their secret societies, they have all different levels of making or getting us to Agenda 2030 living. And my take is that the World Economic Forum with Klaus Schwab, he's probably been sitting on the side and they've kind of brought him in, come in. And for me, it's like seeing a big show. We're looking at the stage of all these elites and these geopolitical players, and they come in and they go out and they're doing whatever they're needing to be done. But in the wings are other actors that haven't been brought on yet. And I think the elites probably saw that they were going to have some difficulties with the COVIDs and with the lockdown. We were being trawled and stalked online to see how each country was performing. What were people saying? Where's the mood? It's a psych operation, a psych war. And I think just to complicate things, just to set us off to one side with our thinking and destabilize our focus, it was time for him to come in with the World Economic Forum and declare that there was going to be a Great Reset in his, as people say, James Bond villain voice. And then, straight away, everyone around the world, presidents, prime ministers, Prince Charles, everyone's saying the same thing. We're going to build back better, as if we needed to build. We just need the elites to leave us alone. What they're building is a disaster. We were doing just fine. And so this Great Reset is to do a new social contract. And that takes us back to about the 1800s, I think I've got that right, to the Enlightenment period, maybe even before. You're looking at John Locke and also Jean-Jacques Rousseau. He talked about a social contract. And his social contract really was about us being forced to be free. And what he meant by that was, as long as we keep our individuality and have a life of our own, we are in bondage. So we must be forced to let go of our individuality, of our creativity, of our thoughts, of anything that makes us as an individual, and we must join the collective, and we must have that hive mind. That is freedom, because we let go of everything of ourselves. That's selfishness. And I think that's what Klaus Schwab is harking on.
Have you seen Star Trek? Do you watch the
I'm glad you mentioned
The Borg.
Yes, because our son has just left home at our youngest child at the beginning of this year, and he put us last year through the whole series of the... Oh, I hated it, but whoa. Talk about announcements.
That's right. The Borg is something that we could end up becoming if we humans don't actually recognise at our heart,
yes,
we've got a far greater destiny.
Yes, we
than
have
to be locked down.
Yeah, and for that we can look at Ray Kurzweil. Yeah, and he's in Silicon Valley. He's got a connection straight to Google. For me, it's the CIA and Google and probably Tavistock in the UK.
That's right.
You know.
Yes, so connected.
Yeah, and when you look at these actors, these players, so you've got Ray Kurzweil and even this David Keith that's doing all the geoengineering and says it's a risk by risk.
He's a terrible person.
They're all weird.
He said, I guess we're piggybacking on our children's
That's
future.
Right. Yeah.
This is terrible.
Yes, it is. And he said, it's a risk by risk. We've got to save the earth, but we're going to kill a few million.
Yes.
You know, it's a risk by risk decision.
Yes.
You know, is it just playing with our lives?
That's
and,
right.
And look at Bill Gates. They're odd. What's his name? Zuckerberg, who, you know, anecdotally is supposed to be another Rockefeller like Bill Gates is.
He's a hybrid. He's a hybrid.
Yeah, well, people are saying, also, I've seen him being interviewed, and he's certainly, I don't know if he's got, if he's a targeted individual or someone's talking in his head, but there's something happening there.
Yes. Yeah, so, well, what do you think, what is the takeaway for us listeners here? Because what I do, I've got the best air. I'm fortunately by a beach. I'm breathing the fresh air, as fresh as can be, bearing in mind that there's so many nanoparticles floating around today. I've got high quality water, 8.4 alkaline. I grow a lot of my organic vegetables. I do my salute to the sun in the morning. I do my meditation prayer twice a day. And my whole game plan is to be able to sit still and allow everything to settle.
Yes.
So that then light can pass through me.
Yes.
What do you suggest to people?
Well, I just moving on exactly what you said, we've established today that we're spirit, soul and body. So we must be anchored spiritually. And you have your meditations. I spend the first half hour to hour, I read my Bible and I pray as a Christian. That's my spiritual anchor. We must have that because there's going to be some weird things that's going to go on as they become more desperate. We're in the decade of chaos now. It's us against them, the many against them, the few. And we must be anchored. We know the suicide rate is going through the roof because people aren't anchored. They're lost and they don't know.
And so it's been censored. And it's been censored.
Yes, yes. So, and then soul, you know, get that vegetable garden in. You've got to learn to be a manufacturing individual again. That's been stolen from us. I boycotted the supermarket. I'd been weaning myself off, but I boycotted the supermarkets when they were shutting down small grocery stores and independent butchers.
Good girl.
Yeah, so forget it. I will go in for the odd thing, but I do not do my shopping, have not done my shopping in a supermarket for about a year and a half now.
Deals on toilet paper, but carry on.
Well, actually, I won't go and tell you what I've got up my sleeve there. Yeah. But at the moment, yes, we are buying toilet paper. Yeah. And so that's, we must have our soul organized, eat well. I don't know, is it Gungeon water you're drinking? I'm not sure. We distill our water. We've done that for about 3 or 4 years now to make sure that we're having cleansed and a negative ion water to detox our body. So that's important.
Yes, that's good too, because from Pure South I get this clay. I'm having this clay mixed up with water. It's good for clearing away radiation.
Bentonite
clay.
Yes.
That's what it is.
Yes. Yeah, perfect. Yeah. And Epsom salts, do your feet soaks. Get out and sweat. You know, we don't sweat that much these days. Get sweaty and get those toxins out.
Barefoot in the garden, barefoot
totally.
On the
get
lawn.
Get anchored. Yep.
Yep.
Get those.
Yep. Yes. Earthing.
Get grounded.
Earthing.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All these things. You see, at the moment, I've just been going to so many meetings.
Mm.
I'm meeting lots of people, particularly around sovereignty now.
Yes,
and,
getting
and
to that.
The, how are we going to respond to the ever-closing circle on us with regard to the injections that have been deployed, so to speak?
Yes, that's right. It's always military. If you notice with the UN and our government, it's always rollout. 5G was rolled out, all this military talk. And, you know, many years ago, was it 20, 30 years ago, our traffic cops were amalgamated with the police, and now there's a move sort of to amalgamate at least in action our police with the military. So our police and our military are being weaponized against us. So we do need to, a Nuremberg Code, we need to understand Article 61, that we have our rights not to be experimented on. And the other key thing we need to understand is this government, imposter government, because it's a corporation. You look at the logo. I was seeing that today. It's just a logo. Don't think that, oh, that's our government. No, that's the corporation's logo. They can only govern by our consent. And so we must speak up. We must say, actually, I don't consent. And so if you're worried about having these so-called vaccines, this mRNA delivery system injected into you, make sure you've got your liability letters written up. If your boss wants you to have one, he needs to sign that if something happens to you, that he will look after you, your family for the rest of his life, may have to sell his house, have it well sorted, get him to sign. Same with the boss above him. Could send out letters of liability to Jacinda Ardern, to Bloomfield, to Hipkins, so that they know the police, your local police, letters of liability. If anything happens to me, think about whether you are like I have. I've got my Hewaka Putanga flag flying. I have my
good on you.
Yep, I have my trespass notice right there. I've also sent in my affidavit to 8 MPs or ministries. Heads in New Zealand government a couple of months ago. I've also sent my oath to the barons under the Magna Carta.
Oh, you have. Good for you.
Yes.
Well, you're showing up a lot of people in New Zealand by leading the way, but letting them know that you're doing the work. You're really doing the work. And so thank you. Yeah. I honour you for wanting to get stuck in and do it, because New Zealanders, we have to encourage them out of a couch.
Yeah, we do. And look, you know, I think that the biggest thing is fear. I mean, it's very fearful. And I remember the day I posted my affidavits. You know, my heart was pounding just to post it. But once it was posted, I was fine.
Yes.
And so often we don't want to turn up somewhere. I've been to freedom rallies here in Wellington and Auckland. And without my consent, the police have come up with their big cameras and taken photographs of me.
I've been in that too many times under TPPA or up and down Queen Street, time and time again, SGE and all this sort of thing. So we're very, very busy, aren't we?
And totally. We have to be.
We have to be because the old story is we're spiritual beings having an earth experience and we have to make sure that every child, because children are so precious, got to keep their inner candle burning strongly. And I talk to kids about this.
That's right.
And whenever I say it, I say, is your inner candle burning strongly today?
Yeah.
And you know what? They'll stand up and their chest will come out.
Right.
And they'll look at me and think, gosh, what's this old codger saying? And all of a sudden, there's a connection and we trust a remembrance of something greater.
Yes. Well, we've got 6 children of our own, my husband and I, and we home-educated them. They never went to school. And I think that's another part of our weaponry and our pushback, is we must bring our children home because they're being propagandized and brainwashed under that narrative. It's like Ardern says, the science. You know, it doesn't mean it's a truthful science. It's just the science. And there is the narrative as well. And we need our children home where we can input ourselves into our own children, our values, our spirituality, what's important to us, connect them with their grandparents, and intergenerational support is really, really important. And I know I've got a book out on home educating, because people think I could never do it. You totally can. You don't bring the school into the home. 101 Reasons to Home Educate in the 21st Century. It's on Amazon and you can buy it from me through my Gmail address. And that will just show you how clearly, how easily, you might say, well, I work part-time, well, or I work. Think about how you might be able to swap things out a bit. Many people are working from home now. It's easier than you think. And you have children that are actually a pleasure to have around you. They don't have that peer pressure and that horrible schooled attitude. They're just gorgeous, gorgeous little individuals that, you know.
Playing and learning.
Yeah, well, up to the age of 8, particularly, play is totally important for empathy. Yet we shove them into school at preschool and they're way away from the values of the home. So that's another, you know, we can be our sovereign, but we can also make sure that we are inputting ourselves and your culture. It's wonderful to be able to, if you're Māori, Pākehā, or many nationalities and ethnicities in the country now, you can place your values, your cultural values, your heritage down to your children. They're not going to get that at school.
This is so true. Yes, I've spent quite a bit of time actually with different people from different countries and their families. And you know what? They love their children too.
Mm.
They really love. So all we can do is trust that you, dear listeners, will take action tonight and do something that you haven't done before.
And just one more thing. Yeah. In the back of We're Revolting and the back of Under the Shadow, my tree metaphor for Agenda 2030, I've got a chapter that's axe to the root.
Yes.
Several different ways that we can chop at that root. And then in my final word, I've got lots of different things that we can do. We can be in our PJs, curlers in our hair, having a cup of tea, but we can be doing positive engagement online and just keep it going. And don't worry if you get put into Facebook jail for a week or a month. Then someone else, it's like you're wounded in the trenches, so you're going to go back into the, you know, the hospital. Yeah, and someone else will take the trench and keep pushing. We must just keep push.
We never give up.
No, mustn't give up, actually.
Trust and believe.
That's right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tim.
Okay, lovely.
You can follow me on BitChute, as my YouTube channel was terminated without any notice a couple of months ago.
It was Antoinette James of AntoinetteJames.com, a New Zealand mum who's prepared to get in and do what's right, not only for her family, her children, but for tomorrow's children as well. So here we are, New Zealanders. Here's our opportunity to be inspired because she's done it, and look how she expresses herself. Antoinette walks her talk. She is just full of impetus to be able to do the right thing for our fast coming future. A gentle reminder of what's really happened. Pulitzer Prize winner, author and journalist Christopher Hitchens says, "We now live in a nation where doctors destroy health, lawyers destroy justice, universities destroy knowledge, governments destroy freedoms, the press destroys information, religion destroys morals, and our banks destroy the economy." Isn't it interesting? Who runs all these institutions? Who runs health? Who runs justice? Who runs universities, governments, and the press, and religion, and the banks? Who is it that run them? This verse from the Bible. "Where there is no vision, the people perish. But he that keepeth the law, happy is he." This is Proverbs 29:18, King James Version. Decide to network. Use every letter you write, every conversation you have, every meeting you attend, every email you send. And remember, even Facebook. To tweet and to express your fundamental beliefs and dreams. Affirm to others the vision of the world you want. Network through thought. Network through action. Network through love. Network through the spirit. You are the center of a network. You are the center of the world. You are a free, immensely powerful source of life and goodness. Affirm it. Spread it. Radiate it. Think day and night about it, and you will see a miracle happen. The greatness of your own life in a world of big powers, media and monopolies, but of 7.8 billion individuals, networking is the new freedom, the new democracy, a new transparency, and a new form of wholeness and happiness. This originated by Dr. Robert Mueller, Chancellor of the World Peace University in Costa Rica, Central America. I invite you to be able to come to greenplanetfm.com, where we have over 500 interviews in our database, which you can readily download and listen to be able to inspire yourself to become the change you want to see in the world. and become involved in caring for your children and grandchildren's future. We are also on Facebook, on Green Planet FM and ourplanet.org. Please come and love us. This is Tim Lynch in the spirit of Aroha, wishing you a wonderful week. We look forward to being with you next week. I say kia kaha and haere rā.